Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. This is Tim Reedy. I'm joined today by our new poetry editor, Brother Joe Hoover. Welcome, Brother Joe.
Hi, Tim. It's great to be here. Thanks.
Now, Brother Joe, I thought perhaps you could just start by introducing yourself. Who are you? Where do you come from? And what do you see as your role here as poetry editor?
You bet. So I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and I went to Jesuit high school and Jesuit college, to Marquette University, and joined the Jesuits when I was 30 and was on track to become a priest and switched to becoming a brother a couple of years ago, and was recently asked to be a poetry editor. So I'll be receiving new poems as they come in, soliciting poems, deciding which poems are right for the magazine or will, you know, great poems, and keeping up the good quality that America's had.
Now, maybe you can speak about it. Like, you have a little background in writing yourself, creative nonfiction. You also do some playwriting.
Yeah. Before I entered the society, I did a lot of playwriting. I produced plays in Omaha and in New York when I moved here. And since joining the Jesuits, I've mostly focused on essay stuff. I've had about 5 or 6 essays published in magazines or collections of essays, and mostly about experiments in Jesuit life, spiritual encounters, interesting characters in Jesuit life. For the past year and a half, I've been writing for a new website called The Jesuit Post, which was started by a number of young Jesuits in formation. Again, talking about encounters in Jesuit life, spiritual encounters, or just everyday life and so forth. So,
right. One of those pieces was published here in America, I believe, on Lent. Was that correct?
Yes. After the Flaw, it was about the little sins that kind of trip us up again and again, and looking at those during Lent.
Yes. We are our friends at the Jesuit Post do good work, and I know you are among their prized writers, and we're happy to have you here at America.
Thanks. No, I'm I was glad to be asked. It was a really nice that Matt Malone asked me to be poetry editor, so.
Now, maybe we could talk a bit about, you know, what does it mean to be poetry editor? Just the logistics of it. I mean, we get poetry mailed to us all the time. We're one of, you know, there are a few journals, but not a great number that publish poetry. So we still get a good number of submissions. So you're getting pieces sent to you all the time.
I am. And, you know, right now I'm looking through a collection of about, let's say, 50, 60 poems, or maybe 50, 60 submissions with a couple, 3, 4 poems each within those submissions. And sifting through and, you know, seeing what I'm looking for, you know, to just get into that, is a good poem. America is a spiritual journal. It's faith, politics, culture, etc. But the poems that I'm interested in don't necessarily have to address faith or religion or spirituality. If it's a good poem and true, that'll speak to God by its very nature. That'll speak to things divine if it has an inherent beauty to it. The beauty can be, let's say, very straightforward, very simple construction poem. It can be a more ornate, chaotic, jazzy type poem. It can certainly be spiritual and religious in nature, but what I'm wary of is poems that try to force religion into it when it doesn't really need to. If someone's writing a good poem about something and they feel that at the end they have to add in a reference to the divine to make it fit America, well, maybe you don't. Maybe we can trust that we'll see the divine or we'll see the beauty or the truth in it that you don't have to give to us. So, yeah, for anyone who's considering submitting, you know, open the gates and write what you want to write, and we'll see if it flies.
Well, that's good advice. I think, you know, even for essays that we get, I mean, I think people are often thinking, okay, what's the America angle? What's the Catholic angle, the Jesuit angle on this? And sometimes that feels natural and organic, but sometimes it feels forced. So I imagine it's the same with poetry, is that you should kind of do what feels right.
I'd say it's great that America publishes poetry, because I think it gets at something that a straightforward essay or journalistic piece doesn't. I mean, those are great, and those are the backbone of the magazine and of journalism. But when you've got things like poetry, art, beauty, they're getting at the truth in a more... My novice master used to quote Emily Dickinson, and I've always remembered this. And I think it's like, I think it goes something like this: tell the truth, but tell it slant. And there's something about that where you get at the truth in a way that's off a little bit, but people see it in a different way, and it kind of cracks something open in us, you know? And it can make things happen inside of us. It can make things happen in the culture, in society, that might not happen in any other way, through any other more, let's say, straightforward political or didactic or argumentative or, you know, kind of approach. So art, poetry, it's if a, something like America or other magazines didn't have it, you might not notice it. You'd be like, so, okay, well, we've got more space to write about the important issues of the day or whatever. but I would say you're not going to get at the that uniquely Catholic approach to the world, which is through art and through beauty, through art and through beauty. There's a great quote from Benedict. I always remember, and again, I'm going to paraphrase this, but basically he said, the most effective means of evangelization for the world have been the saints that the church has produced and the art and beauty that it has produced. And if we lose that, that's a very Catholic thing. And I'm glad that America is making a commitment to that. So,
yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, we review art and film and other pieces of creative work. But there is no space generally other than the poetry section to kind of display it. You know, we're not running short stories. We're not anything else creative. There's really no home for it in the magazine. So the poetry area is one area where people can look to. And also, as you say, it's kind of a nice change from the rest of the content. You know, it may gloss over it sometimes, but other times it may kind of stop you short and, you know, make you think in a different way. So I guess that's what you're looking for when you're looking at the poems, is something that is going to really, you know, draw the reader in and make them think and make them maybe look at things or beauty, you know, help them to encounter beauty in some way.
Yeah, encounter something real. And if you think about it, I think about this sometimes too. You've got a tradition of art in the Catholic Church, of literature and music and of painting, plastic arts, I guess, material arts, that either is sponsored by the church or inspired by a Catholic in the church or et cetera. And it's universally, like the good stuff, is universally hailed and universally listened to and watched and read and by people who wouldn't even necessarily care or be into the Catholic faith or don't give, you know, two shakes about Catholicism or Christianity, but are drawn to a great Caravaggio painting or drawn to a Bach oratorio or Mozart's Requiem or Dante's Inferno. Or so it's an evangelizing tool, and not to make it so crass as like we're just trying to rope people in, but the fact is when you do create beauty, when great writers and great poets do create something of beauty and something of truth, which they do because, you know, they're compelled to do it, it will draw people in. It just will.
Maybe you could speak about you mentioned Emily Dickinson. Are there other, you know, kind of favorites you have who might kind of guide your in your role as poet?
I would say this. I mean, I like poems. I'm looking for poems in general that are surprising, that juxtapose images that you wouldn't normally think of, that sometimes speak simple truths in a very plain way, but they just get it across without any unvarnished. There's not one formula or one type of poet I would look for, a Seamus Heaney or an E. Cummings or a Billy Collins or, you know, all those folks are great, but really it's kind of like that adage, you know it when you see it. There's something that speaks to you and it just has it. And so it could be very frustrating for some person trying to write for America to say, well, what does he want? He just knows it when he sees it. Oh my gosh, how am I supposed to? But writers, good writers over time, they just develop a sense. they may have all the tools, everything's right in the poem, they're doing all the correct things poetically or writerly, but it just lacks that something. And they're a good poet and they're a good writer, but that poem, that particular poem that they've sent, just doesn't have it. And then a week later, they write a poem that does. And you just know it when you see it. And I'm going to choose poems that Father James Torrens probably wouldn't choose. He'll choose poems that I wouldn't choose, maybe. And so on to Paul Mariani and previous poetry editors. And that's a good thing, too, you know, different perspectives and so forth. You know it when you see it, and you want something that speaks true.
Now, you know, some people have commented that, you know, we're at a time, age of Twitter, Facebook, where concision is important. And so maybe it's a good time for poetry, because poetry is often about, you know, saying things economically. Do you think there's something that, you know, a little bit different about the new media environment that could help kind of the flourishing of poetry?
You know, that's a good point. I didn't think about it quite that way. When I came on, Matt Malone said maybe you could do, and he was just speaking off the top of his head, like Twitter haiku or something. There is a certain poetry to, like, quick emails, texts, Twitters, or there can be, you know, maybe inadvertently even. So, sure, I think it could. But I'd also say this. If something's good, I think people are going to take the time with it. And maybe that's very idealistic of me, and I'm you know, not caught up in the digital age of a quick, but people will sit through a long movie if it's good, if it captures them. They will read books that are long and that are, you know, if it's good, if it's true. And you can't sacrifice truth or, you know, for just simple concision. I believe in brevity, trust me, especially you priests out there, please. Oh, this is great. But and being aware of your audience, and the clock is ticking, and people need, and things need to move. A poem needs to move. A play needs to move. Things need to happen. You can't dwell on moments and sort of. But if it's good, people will stay with you.
No, that's a good point. You know, books like Game of Thrones are selling like crazy, and those are, you know, thousands of pages.
Yeah,
but people are reading them.
Right,
it's a good story.
So. Right.
I mean, obviously, poetry different. We're not publishing any epic poems, but I guess the question of, like, whether a poem should be demanding and kind of hard to access. I mean, do you have any sense of that? I mean, if, I guess it could be beautiful just to read and to read aloud, but maybe a little difficult to understand, and that's okay.
Yeah, Tim, that's a great question. Again, I think that there's some poems that you might not, I might not catch all the references, but it's still interesting. And maybe I want to even look up those references, you know, if you, or like some short stories are like that too. If you read, you know, Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, and you don't know the Catholic liturgy or spirituality, it's still fascinating. And the words are great sounding, and the way that they speak and the drama of it. And it kind of makes you want to learn more about it. And, you know, there's poems that could be just nonsense and just filled with all sorts of traps and mazes and hidden meanings that are too obscure for even anyone's time. But, you know, I think it's okay to have some mystery. It's okay to have a little bit of obscurity, even if it means someone has to think or go back to it. And I don't get that image. What is he trying to say? You know, I think of songs that I have listened to for like 20 years, and I still don't know what the guy's trying to say, but I keep going back to it. I mean, I diamonds on the soles of his shoes, like she makes the sign of a teaspoon, he makes the sign of a wave. The poor boy changes clothes and puts on aftershave. But what does that mean? What is the sign of a teaspoon, and what is the sign of a wave? I don't really know, but it's a great image. Or diamonds on the soles of your shoes is a great image, Paul Simon. But poems that you can live with, that you can go back to, that there's more depth, that there's more to it, those are great.
I We talked before about new media, you know, ways to take advantage of the new media. This is one, you know, just have a conversation with
you. Yeah, this is great. We're on the cutting edge right now. We are it, America Magazine.
But also reading poetry. I mean, we did it once with one of the Foley winners. We had him read the poem, and we put that up online. So, you know, there are ways to get that music in a way that maybe you don't always encounter on the page.
Yeah, we'd like to have, you know, I don't know whether it's virtual poetry readings or, you know, sponsor them in the city here in New York or, I mean, the poetry slams are huge, you know, everywhere. Spoken word, period, moth storytelling hours, and there's, and I have to say this, and this is all I get on my little preachy part here, but I do believe, and I've had arguments about this, that the more we get into a techno age and we're in it and we're going to go deeper and deeper and deeper, that the more inversely people will crave live performance, live contact with real performers in front of them. There will just be an always a balance because, I don't know, I just think it's inside us. And so, yeah, poetry read out loud, you know, Shakespeare, I teach Shakespeare to grade school kids and they get it when they read it out loud and they can do Shakespeare. I mean, they can do third, fourth, fifth graders can get the sense of those beautiful words because they're all about action. And as he says, the words, let the words suit the meaning and the meaning suit the word. And the words are meant to be spoken and performed and they drive action forward and they're full of vital life, people on the edge. You know, Shakespeare is great for kids, actually. So I am a big believer in performance and poetry.
I want to thank Brother Joe Hoover again for joining us, and we look forward to our work together and as your first year as poetry editor here at America.
Thanks a lot, Tim. I'm really excited to be working with the poets that submit to us and to be working with the tradition of America's poetry. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.